Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome, welcome. So glad that you are here as we are in the business of prescribing hope for healthy families. And in a world that just seems like it's filled with bad news, we've got some good news for you today and honestly every day. Now, I know on this show we talk a lot about moms and mom issues, but we really have a heart for dads, and we've got plenty of shows for dads. And today is one of those shows. We have got on as a guest, Tony Trammell. Now, he is the founder of Dadhood, and he has just been working with young men in his church since the 90s, which Tony, my kids would say, is in the previous century and makes us officially old, but that's okay. It just makes us experienced and seasoned, right? And he started working as a member of the board of trustees at his local pregnancy center, and he started to feel a burden for young men coming into the center. And we're going to hear his story of how that happened, and his ministry is called Building Dads in Pink Buildings and Dadhood. And now Tony and his wife Amy and they have three adult children, and they are also involved in the ministry. So Tony, I can't wait to dive in and to hear about your story. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I'm blessed to be here with you.
Well, Tony, just start by telling us a little bit about your story, your Christian testimony, and what led you to start working with young men in your church.
Well, I was saved when I was 11 years old, and I was in church all through my before that, and also through my teen years and all that. But I really wasn't. I was active in church, but I really wasn't walking with God, if that makes sense. Until I was basically out of college. A lot of that had to do with my wife, Amy, kind of repointing me in the right direction. After we got married, we were very active in our church. Every time the doors were open, we were there. We were doing something. But I was still not totally surrendered to God. And that really came about in 1996, we'd already had our two sons, Scott and Joe, and my wife was pregnant with our daughter, Tara, and she was born on the 4th of July of 1996, and she had a rough pregnancy. Joe was only 15 months old when his sister was born, so they were kind of close together. So she had a difficult pregnancy and a really difficult birth, and a couple of days after Tara was born, my wife had some real health issues that popped up, and I had to take her to the emergency room when Tara was just a couple of days old, and it turns out that she was diagnosed with postpartum cardiomyopathy, and her heart was severely damaged, and she was not in good shape. They were worried first about her survival because her ejection fraction was so low. And she was basically restricted to just bed rest for the first 6 or 8 months of Tara's life. So I had a 4-year-old who was like a little intellectual, a 15-month-old who was totally bouncing off the walls and always had a ball in his hand throwing it someplace, and a newborn. So I just kind of was overwhelmed. And for about the first week, at that time of my life, I was a bridge builder, and I had it in my head, being a man, you know, that I'm pretty tough, and I build bridges for a living, and I can handle this. You know, this is mm-hmm. no problem. I have to do a little more work, but I can handle this. Jessica, I lasted 1 week.
Oh my goodness, Tony.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where that God literally brought me to my knees. And it just kind of really hit. And I was just at the point where I just surrendered to God. I said, Lord, I can't do this. You're going to have to do something. You're going to have to intervene. You're going to have to heal, which I know that God can heal. I saw it myself. But I just basically surrendered all to God. And the circumstances didn't change, but the peace that I had changed. It was almost like God was saying, just hold on for the ride, and I've got things to show you. So I just kind of surrendered, gave everything to God. And for the first year of Tara's life, my wife could do very, very little, even after 6 or 8 months. So I'll just be honest, during that point in time in my life was the closest I've ever been to God. I had to rely on God, and I know we do anyway, but I had to really rely on him day in and day out, minute by minute. And during that next year, God just started showing me some things. And I just felt like he was calling me to do more. I kind of argued with God for many months, like, God, you can't seriously need me to do something more. You know, I don't have anything to offer. But he kind of changed my outlook. He changed my life. And then after that year, you know, we still had family issues going on with the kids and my wife's health and things. But began to really notice, for some reason, young people. I noticed in our church and as many other churches, as young, I still say kids. You know, I'm sorry, but kids are the older I get, the higher the threshold for what a kid is. You know, I'm
so true.
Everything under 30 is a kid to me anymore. So, but I would notice when they would graduate high school, they would slide away. They would slip away. And, you know, some would still be around, but many of them got out into the world and started doing their own thing, and they would just lose church. So I began to see that, began to have a burden for that, especially for the young men that I knew God had better things for, because I knew them more personally. So we started a ministry in our church for young adults and, you know, Sunday school and activities and all these kinds of things. And I started doing some discipleship with young men. I began to learn more because I was being challenged by trying to challenge them. So I began to see that, and as I began to see what was going on in their lives, my burden just for young men and young adults, but especially young men, just really, really grew. And God just took that and ran with it, starting in 1997. So that's where my personal story, and now I'm much older. My oldest is 32 years old, 32 and 30 and 28, about to be 29, so or about to be 28, yeah.
And they're in ministry with you. I mean, honestly, Tony, there's a few points I want to talk about from your story, because I think, first of all, every stay-at-home mom everywhere, stay-at-home dad, they rejoiced after hearing you lasted a week. They're like, yes, it's that hard. I mean, it really is tough taking care of kids. And I think it's so beautiful that God prepares us for the calling that he is going to put on our lives. And so looking at your ministry, which is called Dadhood, I mean, what a heart for fatherhood you must have cultivated during that time where you did have to step up. Because anytime you hear cardiomyopathy, I mean, that's scary when you start talking about things that are going on with your heart, especially young mothers. I mean, that is terrifying, but I think the irony is there that God used your wife's heart to get a hold of yours. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And the second thing that I get from that, Tony, is that you're a bridge builder. I mean, this is, you know, you weren't a pastor or, you know, in the ministry full time as a vocation. You are a bridge builder, but God has used you now to build bridges for men in pregnancy centers. And I was so fascinated when I started looking at this. And as I read about your story, looking at, you know, when the guys came in, I want to read something from an article that you wrote, because you said that you were invited to be a board member of a pregnancy center in 1999. And you went there, and this is what you saw. I'm going to read this paragraph. You said, "The guys coming in didn't feel welcome. The few who had cell phones back then tried to hide them behind in the waiting room with little success. They were surrounded by girls, babies, and pamphlets about breastfeeding, so they just stared at the floor. They were begging God for a negative test result from behind that door to the great unknown. They saw the building and the overall ministry as pink, a place where female medicine took place. They heard whispers coming from behind the sliding glass window. Who's the guy in the waiting room? So I would love to hear about your transition into this ministry and how God lifted your eyes to see the fathers that were coming into this place that seems so girl-centric and pink.
Yeah. Yeah, pink is, I think, describes it in one word. Doing what I've been doing at church, a couple of people that were very active in our center kind of noticed that, and that I had a heart for the not only abortion and life issue, but also with young adults. So when I was asked to be on the board in 1999, I really had a front row seat then to these young men coming in, what was going on in these young lives, and what was going on with you know, with the pro-life cause, and seeing this more, I just really had a burden just to talk to these guys. If nothing else, just wanted to talk to them. And began to really see what their needs were. And I saw that our center, like still many centers today, we were not reaching the other half of this need, the other half of this ministry that was just sitting there. So in 2001, I was still working, but in 2001, we got referred a couple of young men by our county juvenile judge. There were a couple of young men who were in problem, were in trouble, having to do with some of the issues that we dealt with, and he sent them to us just to talk. So that really just increased my burden for these guys after I met with them two or three times. 2003, I had been having my own health issues, and make a long story short, in 2003, I was diagnosed with epilepsy.
Oh,
which
wow.
Came out of left field completely. I had no idea where that came from. Still don't. But God used that. I had to take a medical retirement. I didn't have any choice. I could not have seizures and operate equipment to build bridges with. So I was kind of pushed into that, and I realized as soon as that happened that God had opened the door here. I had been praying for him to open a door, whatever he wanted me to do, for years. That's not the way you expect him to open doors.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't expect that to be the way into ministry. I thought, well, someday I'll have enough money I can, you know, jump into ministry. And people who are in ministry know that's not how it works. So,
right.
So I was able to become a full-time volunteer, and I just jumped into starting a men's ministry. Well, in 2003, first of all, our center had no money. I mean, we didn't have mm-hmm. we didn't have space in the building. We didn't have any savings. There was no place to put a line item for men at all. But the board, you know, saw the burden I had and said, "Okay, let's see what we got. As long as you can do it for free, we'll try it." So in 2003, there was nothing out there available to work with men. No curriculum. No. Nothing material at all to hand them or work with them with. The National Fatherhood Initiative was just getting started. They had a lot of great research, and they were just starting to make some of their own material things. But, you know, it was just really a burden, and that's all. So there's nothing organized or fancy about it when we got started. But I just started to write things. And I enjoyed writing, so I began to write curriculum and flyers and things based on what the young men were talking about when they came in, the questions that they had. And they wanted something put in their hands. And I said, well, if you come back next week, I'll have something to give you about that.
And you know what, Tony? I'm going to hold you right there because we're up against a break here. But I'll give our listeners a little spoiler ahead. The answer actually came from the most unlikely places, and God moved your ministry to an attic, Tony. And when we come back, we are going to talk about what happened in that attic and how God used that as a ministry for you. It's been so encouraging, Tony, to hear how, you know, I already said God got a hold of your heart through your wives and through your wife's heart, and he got a hold of your mind too. I mean, even through something unexpected. But I heard you use my favorite phrase in the history of ever, and that is, but God. When we come back, we'll talk more with Tony Trammell, the founder of Dadhood. Don't go away. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that is a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
We worship the God who was, we worship the God who is, we worship the God who evermore will be. He opened the prison doors, he parted the raging sea. My God, he holds the victory.
Well, that is an encouraging message that there is joy in the house of the Lord. And I think about our God being with us, whether that's here on the radio show or in the attic of a pregnancy center. Welcome back, friends. We're talking to Tony Trammell, the founder of Dadhood. And if you listen to the first segment, what a great testimony he shared with us of just his personal story of becoming a dad and then being invited to become a board member on the board of trustees at a local pregnancy center in the 90s and seeing this question asked over and over again, who's the guy in the waiting room? But Tony saw the guy in the waiting room. And Tony, you were just sharing with us how you started to write curriculum for them. And I want to get into this attic space. What happened? This was fascinating for me to read about.
Well, the center we were in then was an old house. It was about 100 years old. Big old house. The basement was full of clothing and stuff for the pregnant girls. The first floor was the counseling rooms. The second floor was the administrative offices. There was no place for the guys, and I thought the guys needed their own space. Well, we had an attic, and the attic was like everybody else's attic. It was just full of junk. So I just started cleaning it out and trying to free up some space and got some used almost junk. I mean, it was, you know, whatever was free and available. We had some couple hand-me-down chairs and different things, but we just set up a guys-only space, and we came up with this really fancy title. We called it The Attic. So
sounds like a guy thing to do, right?
Yeah, and you know what? The guys loved that. They really did, because mm-hmm. it was their space. It was 2 floors separated from their partners. So the girls were downstairs. They were up there. Very private. It was either hot or cold, you know, in between. But and we just decorated it like somebody told me once it looked like a young man's version of Cracker Barrel. It was just stuff all over the walls and, you know, various things.
I love it.
So we just, and the guys just loved it, and it was just very, a very productive place, very guy-friendly space, and the rest of the building wasn't. So they really began to attach themselves to it. I'll tell you, some days, Jessica, there are days I miss being in that attic because I got to talk with these guys. I got to lead some of them to Christ, I was able to share the gospel with most of them. I saw young men grow from coming in the door, these scared little kids. I know some of them now have, you know, kids in their 20s. Mm. A young client that became a really good friend, his son graduated high school a couple days ago. So you see that kind of history, and you kind of miss those days, you know. Mm-hmm. But the attic was part of what we called a pink building. And the guys see that a pregnancy center is pink. It's a place where girls go. And they see the ministry overall as pink. It's not really for them. So when other centers later on were talking, you know, 2010 or something like that, I'd been in that attic, and we also had a satellite center, but every day for 7 years, and writing the curriculum and all those things along the way. But when I stepped back from doing that in 2010 on a daily basis, I wrote a book called Building Dads in Pink Buildings. And basically saying that men didn't feel welcome there, like you had said, that they walked in and it just wasn't their kind of place. So my idea was to build dads in that pink building and make it a little less pink and a little more blue. And the curriculum that I wrote kind of went along with that. But now centers use that Building Dads for Pink Buildings to get a new men's ministry off the ground.
I think that is absolutely amazing. And you know, Tony, I think about, you know, I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner. I practice in primary care. And I can't tell you the number of times that I've seen young girls, young teenage girls who come into my clinic, and I am telling them that they have an unexpected pregnancy. They come in and they don't know anything yet. They're not connected to a pregnancy center or anything like that. They're just now taking the news. And, you know, so many times what I see those young women asking me and wondering out loud, even before they're thinking about what are their parents going to think, they're wondering, what is the father going to think of that pregnancy, thinking yeah. of who the father is. And that's what they want. And basing that their reaction on what that father's reaction is going to be, wanting acceptance, right. wanting love in so many cases, and wanting a positive reaction or just some measure of support, and thinking about that. And I think that, you know, you're right. Once that we get to the pregnancy center, it's kind of, we've truncated it, but they're very much still a part of the heart and the mind and the vision, and thinking, okay, what is this going to look like going forward for things like financial support or practical support or emotional support? And so I think just the fact that you saw them there in this space is really beautiful. And Tony, I'm sure you've experienced, just like I have, this work can be exhausting. And in 2010, you started to experience some burnout that led to a pivot or a shift in your ministry. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I began to, you know, having done it every day for 7 years, I was getting a little bit burnt out, but I also saw a bigger picture, because some other centers were calling me and saying, what are you doing? How'd you get started? Kind of thing. So I tried to get a little broader vision, and I stepped back in 2010 from doing that. And that's when I began to focus on doing some more writings and trying to help other centers. And I just really let God open the doors. I didn't go knocking on doors saying, hey, do you need me? Here I am. I just kind of let God open the doors along the way, and began to use it. And I was just been shocked at how he's done that along the way ever since. It's amazing to see God work. And just to look back, you know, the article you referred to, I was asked to write by CareNet, and I had to sit and actually try to jog my memory. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. And it's just the things you you look back and you can see where God opened this door and that door, and just piece by piece start to put the puzzle together. He's not finished yet, of course, but just it's amazing to watch God work, isn't it?
It is. I completely agree. And I look and see the evolution of what you've done and just continue to be struck by the fact that there really is not a lot of conversation in this space. And we start to see that happening, but you were there really before that happened. And you talked about even starting to go to care conferences. And this was a quote from your article. You said that, you know, the vast majority of the attendees were female. And I think many of them passed by the booth just to see if the rumors they had heard were true. I heard whispers like, wow, there is a booth here for guys. What is the world coming to, Mary? But you kept going anyway. And I think being on the forefront of this, what has that meant to you, Tony, as a dad? Because this journey really started with your own personal journey being a dad, knowing what it took, knowing how hard it was, but also seeing how rewarding it is. And now your children have joined you in ministry. So what was their journey like watching you do all of this, and what has that been like now for them to step in beside you?
Well, you know, that could be a loaded question, Jessica. That you probably have to ask them, and I'd hope they'd have good answers, but, you know, they grew up around pregnancy center activities, walks for life and banquets and different things like that. So they knew where mom and dad's mindset was. As this began to grow into a much larger ministry than I ever imagined it being, they just naturally came alongside and helped. My oldest son, Scott, goes to some conferences with me. He's going with me again this year. My middle son, Joe, when he got into college, he got very active in pro-life causes in college, and he went on to law school. So now he's my legal advisor and does a lot of the paperwork and stuff that you have to do as a ministry, unfortunately, you know. Mm-hmm. My daughter is a teacher, but in the summertime, if I'm going to do a training someplace, she wants to jump on board, and she helps take care of a lot of the planning and things like that. She just loves to do that. So in their own individual ways, you know, they're not like full-time employees, but they just still have a piece in it. And over the years, that's kind of trying to teach other men what it means to be a father has really weighed on me that I'm telling people how to do this, and I don't think I'm doing a very good job myself. You know, so it was really convicting in so many ways.
Well, that does sound like a loaded question, loaded with blessings for sure, because to have your children step in beside you, I mean, that just speaks volumes about the impact of the authenticity of your faith and your mission and your journey. And since you started, you know, back in the 90s, back in what my kids call the literal previous century, there's been a lot that's changed. Yeah. And you mentioned the National Fatherhood Initiative. What other resources do you see? What do you see changing in the national dialogue to talk about dads? How do you see that now compared to when you started?
Well, it's really been amazing to watch. I started out with nothing to work with and nobody around to work with. I was talking about that on a Zoom call this morning, actually, about how it's kind of like being an island. And when I went to a national conference for the first time in 2014, I found that there were other islands around the country. But Heartbeat International asked me to do some things to help get them. I did some webcasts and things, but CareNet has taken that, and now they have several full-time staff members that are focused just on fatherhood. When I went to that first conference in 2014, I was the odd man out, literally, you know. Mm-hmm. Now I'm seeing, and what we're seeing across the country is there's been curriculum written. There's a lot of internet-based materials now for expectant fathers and fathers. There's a lot of stuff out there to work with. There are a lot of centers now that are adding this as a real ministry, not just you're welcome to come in and sit down, guys, kind of thing, but actually have services specifically for young men. There are fellowships now that men have to be able to work together and be able to pick the brains of other men in various locations. And now there are, you know, 100 or more centers that offer real services for fathers. It's just been amazing to see that the growth that's really exploded in really just within the last 5 years. And, you know, I didn't do anything for this, but I've been so blessed to be able to sit back from where I was sitting in an attic to what I see now going on and being able to actually know these people, you know, and be able to see how God has worked in all these different places in the country. And it's just, you know, when God gives you a front row seat, boy, you better perk up and watch, because he's put you there for a good reason. And he's just been so good to me and to my family.
Well, he gave you a front row seat. And one of the things that I read was one of the blessings your ministry had was the donation of Lazy Boy recliners. And you talked about your affection for whoever donated those. And I think that's such a beautiful picture of everybody, you know, having their own gifts. So people who are listening, some people may think, okay, well, there's no way that I could be a coach to these guys, or I'm not working in a pregnancy ministry. But something as simple as, you know, as donating recliners that they have to sit there. And you said that also a local gynecologist had donated a TV and a VCR. So you were even ordering VHS tapes off of eBay. What are other things if people are thinking, listening to you, thinking, you know, this may be something that I could do? How could they get involved, Tony?
Well, I know that centers are always looking for male help on some level. You know, there are men who want to be involved in a center, but they can't imagine the thought of actually talking to somebody as a client or whatever. And there's, I know men who just go in and they're like the maintenance guys. They do work, and that's just as important a part of ministry as the people who talk to somebody, because you wouldn't be able to talk to somebody if there wasn't somebody who was providing the space and taking care of the space. But men who want to get involved in something like this, they can find places more than likely near them who want to do it, but they don't think there are any men who want to do it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I have a booklet called A Few Good Men, Finding and Keeping Male Coaches. Coaches are what I call the guys who meet with the guys. Mm-hmm. And I think there are men out there who want to do something, they just don't know quite how. And I think there are centers out there who want to do things like this, they just don't know quite how. Getting them married, you know, and on the same page is a little bit of a challenge, but I encourage any man who's listening to contact a local center. He may already be involved in that center somehow by being a walker in a Walk for Life or an attendee at a banquet or something like that, and they want to do more. Just reach out and ask, you know, what's going on in this center? In what way could I be used? And they'd probably be very pleasantly surprised.
I bet so, Tony.
You know, and for availability.
You know, we're not finished talking about this. When we come back, let's talk more about your curriculum and how people can connect. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this break.
People have value, but just where does it come from?
God created us in his image, as male and female.
But the enemy is deceiving so many.
We like to shake our fist at God and say, why did you make me this way? I don't like it. I'm going to define who I am for myself.
We must stand on God's truth.
Can we change God's words? Can we change the tense? It's just the tense of a verb. Come on. To be able to get along with everybody, we don't have the luxury to edit what God has said.
In His Image is a life-changing film that takes you through Scripture and shares powerful testimonies to destroy Satan's attempts to pervert God's perfect design.
There's only one last major holdout in society to shed light on what the truth is, and that is the church.
Watch it again or for the first time, anytime on AFA Streaming. Streaming.afa.net. Streaming.afa.net.
Then sings my soul, my Savior God to thee.
one of our favorite hymns, right? Who doesn't love that song? I mean, you can just give me all kinds of arrangements. My particular favorite is Carrie Underwood's. I'm just going to put it out there. I really love her version of that song. But God is great, and He is doing great things. And we are talking about one of those great things with Tony Trammell, the founder of Dadhood. And he's been telling us his remarkable story of going from being a bridge builder, like actually building physical, literal bridges, to building bridges for guys in pregnancy centers and coaching men to be fathers through his own journey as a father, as a believer, and now through his journey in his ministry. And Tony, right before the break, you were right in the middle of some great information encouraging men to think, hey, this isn't just not for you, to call and to just ask, how could you use my services? How could you use my skill set or my gifting? So I want to let you go ahead and finish that of how people can connect to a pregnancy center, how men can connect.
Well, a lot of times they, like I said, they are familiar with the center anyway and what it does in some capacity, and they just want to take it to the next level. And I would just encourage them to reach out to someone at the center, the director, client services director, whoever it might be. There may be already a staff volunteer or a male staff volunteer or someone who's already doing something like this who's looking for more help. So I would encourage them just to reach out, even ask somebody at an activity or an event if there's a place for them. And I think they'd be amazed that, like I said, God's looking for availability, not really ability all the time.
That's right, because He will equip those that He calls, and just like He equipped you through your own personal story. And I want to hear more about your curriculum, Tony, and the Dadhood curriculum. What does that look like? How would people get a hold of it? What does it look like in practice?
Well, like I said earlier, I started having to write it because there was no money to buy anything, and there was nothing out there to buy as far as curriculum to use with young men. And when I started to write lessons, I wrote more and more and more over the course of 7 years, and I had what they call a file cabinet. And young adults anymore say, "What's a file cabinet?" Well, it's kind of like a database, but in
or the yellow pages, right? You
know. Yeah, yellow pages. Yeah. And they just kind of look at you real funny, but, you know, I'm showing my age here. But I basically took all of that, and I took actually a year or two and just combined and edited and rewrote and these kind of things. And I came up with 40 lessons for expectant fathers as the target, starting with lesson one is you just got a positive pregnancy test. Don't panic. Don't run. You know, we're here to help. It's going to be okay. All the way up to the last lesson is basically about you're now home with your baby, life has changed, et cetera. So it's broken down in four segments, but it's actually 10 different lessons to walk a young man through a pregnancy. Now, it starts out with the first set of lessons, basically getting him used to the idea of becoming a father and actually challenging him to look at his own father and relationship. About 90% of the young men who come into a pregnancy center are from father absent homes. So
wow.
they have no clue what a good father looks like, or even having any kind of a positive male role model even looks like. So starting them off with that and kind of, you know, transitioning them to the idea of it, trying to find out where their concerns are. There's various lessons to try to gain some knowledge of what they're going through. And then we get into the curriculum gets into the more practical things. There's like four lessons just on budgeting. That's the kind of stuff that young men look at. You know, they look at the money and they look at the health and those kinds of things. So there's a more practical section. Then basically the last of the three main sections is basically getting him ready for delivery day, which I always tell him is D-Day. So they get ready for that. And then there's other 10 other lessons that are very situation specific, depending upon that young man. Some centers use that in classes. I wrote it with the target of being like one-on-one mentoring. That's where my heart was. That was where my desire was. And it's basically, a coach can pick and choose from all those lessons what fits that particular young man. So it's not like a, you know, one size fits all kind of thing like some things are today. It's not broad at all. It's very detailed. So you can really work with a young man exactly where he is.
Those are all really great. And those are available on your website, right? How would people get a hold of this curriculum, yes. Tony?
Dadhood.org, D-A-D-H-O-O-D.org. My contact information is on there. I'm always, you know, taking questions or emails or whatever. I'm always glad to help offer advice. The advice I get is mostly from stuff other people tell me. So I'm able to pass it along. I got the name Dadhood years ago from the difference I see between being a father and being a dad. You know, we have a lot of fathers running around in America today who are not really dads. They father children, but they're not really engaged with raising them. So that's where I got the dadhood versus fatherhood concept at all.
And you know, that it's so interesting, even in listening, because I'm a woman, Tony, you know, and listening, I'm a mom, and listening to you even talk about the curriculum, to hear you, one of the first things you say is budgeting. I think, you know, Tony, I have taught a lot of motherhood classes, of classes for new moms, and I honestly don't think we have any budgeting things in there. We just don't think of like that. We think about, here's how you swaddle, here's how you feed, here's how you, you know, connect for immunizations or whatever, you know, it's going to be those things that new moms worry about. But thinking about budgeting, it reminded me, not too long ago, my husband and I had gone to see the movie about For King and Country, Unsung Hero. And if you haven't seen it, it follows the story of a dad who loses his job in Australia, comes to America and goes through financial hardship. His family basically loses everything, and they come together, and you know, they and God provides for them. And I remember, you know, the movie honestly made me a little teary, because I was thinking, this is so beautiful. This family is experiencing hardship, but here they are, you know, all banding together. They're all using their gifts, and they're all overcoming this. And I looked over, and Tony, my husband, you know, was teary eyed, and I thought, oh, he's thinking the same thing as me. But when we talked about it later, he said, I could not just get over the feeling of burden and guilt. He said, you don't know what it means as a father, as a man in our family, to feel like I can't provide, like I'm not going to be able to provide. That is just crippling. And I thought, you know what? He's right, Tony. I'll never be able to understand that and see that, and just seeing the different lens that men look at this experience with and the women look at experience, because the women obviously have a very physical experience. They're carrying a child, and men, it's very, very different. They're thinking about the future. And I think what you're talking about, there's a lot of fathers, but not a lot of dads. What do you see as the impact in society today of absent fathers? You talked about, that's amazing, 90% of men who walked in are from father absent homes. What else do you see as the impacts on society, and what could a program like Dadhood change about that?
Well, you know, there's about 20 million, roughly 20 million kids in America today that are living in father absent homes. There's a sizable percentage of those that have never even met their biological father, which is a really, really sad tale. I believe that based on scripture that men are wired by God to want to naturally protect their kids and provide for their kids. I think that's just a natural God-given mindset and a God-given burden. When men are not able to do that for whatever reason, you have negative consequences. We have a lot of angry men out there today, a lot of angry young men who are angry towards their biological fathers, just a lot of anger out there. So the effects, the ripple effect that father absence has on us is amazing. Their National Fatherhood Initiative has some really good numbers on that, that kids who are raised in father absent homes are much higher risk to be raised in poverty, to have behavioral problems, to commit crime, to go to prison. be much more likely to become pregnant as a teenager, more likely to abuse drugs, more likely to drop out of high school, more likely to face abuse and neglect in their lives. And some of that then goes to the point of having an effect on abortion, because as you were saying before with the girls that you see, mm-hmm. their concern of the reaction of the father of their child, what is he going to be? That's the biggest impact that the girls have in their consideration of having an abortion. Most times they base their decision on pressure from him to abort, or him showing a lack of support for her pregnancy or for their child. So it's just a generational thing we've seen that has grown over the last couple of generations, and it's a thing that's just really killing so many areas of society. I don't think we put all the pieces together sometimes.
It is really sobering. And I think that one of the important pieces of your ministry, Tony, is connection to the local church. So what does that look like?
Well, you know, I do have some churches I've been working with, you know, even in the past year. Churches more and more are seeing this need just because it's real, and it's mm-hmm. because it's
absolutely
landing in the laps of churches. Some churches today are starting to notice that either they're forming tighter partnerships with pregnancy centers, and it's not just a funding thing, we're going to give you money. It's actually a partnership of, we have this young man or this young woman in the church who has this need. We want to partner with you because you have more resources than we do. Or some churches that I've been working with that, especially in the community that they are in, they have this need, they see this need, so they want to better equip themselves by getting curriculum and have a book about abortion-minded or abortion-vulnerable men that they're seeing in churches. So they're trying to grab hold of some resources, because it just, one of those things that overwhelms churches at times. They have plenty of other things going on, and this is one of those things that can kind of be a little bit much, where they need some help.
Absolutely. And so what do you hope for the future of your ministry, Tony? Where do you see it going from here? What are you working on now? And what do you hope that our listeners will take away from this?
Well, that's a good question. I've been guilty, I think, and I think a lot of us are at times, of trying to put God in a box. You know, God's going to do this, but no more. Or, you know, God, you need to do it this way, and then he surprises you from coming from a different direction. I'll be very honest with you. I just want to be relevant. I hope that doesn't sound, I don't want to sound prideful, but I just want to be able to help somehow. I want to be able to be involved in the conversation. I have more impact in some ways today of just knowing men and ministries all over the country. So if I talk to somebody and they contact me, I'm able to a lot of times connect them with somebody or say, hey, this center is doing this for men, this center is doing that for men. And, you know, part of my ministry now is almost being like a clearinghouse of information. Mm-hmm. But, you know, training, I do trainings and things like that, training men how to use the curriculum that I wrote years ago. So, you know, I'm not in a center every day anymore. I do miss it sometimes, but I still have my finger in other ministries, if that makes sense, and just try to help them any way that I can. Now, what that leads to down the road, I have no idea. I often think I'm too old for this. You know, it's time to let the kids take over.
Well, I don't
God
know, Tony.
Kind of, you know, repoint me.
You've been through cardiomyopathy and seizures and all kinds of things, and yet God continues to use you to build bridges in this space. And I just thank you so much for sharing your incredible testimony today of going from being a literal bridge builder to a spiritual bridge builder and a family bridge builder from fatherhood to dadhood. Thank you so much for sharing with us. You can find out more about Tony Trammell at dadhood.org. That's dadhood.org. And you can see more about the curriculum that he has there and the resources. And friends, thank you so much for joining us. May the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he give you peace. And we can't wait to see you right here next time, where we're prescribing more hope for healthy families. God bless you guys. Have a great day. We'll see you soon.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.